This is Near FM
90.3. Hi, and welcome to the International Writers Network. And today we have a wonderful author, Deirdre Powell, and she has produced a devotional which I think by the time you listen to what she has to say, you're going to be a wonderful prayer person. Even if you didn't pray before, you'd be encouraged to pray. At least I know I was, you know. And Deirdre wrote this wonderful book, and God in Every Day, a Whispered Prayer. Now, I'm not going to talk much more. Deirdre, you're welcome to this platform.
That's very kind of you. Thank you for having me on your program. Thank you, Mary.
Do you know what? I love the title of your book, and I love the fact that it contains so much that after a COVID experience is the kind of thing we need to challenge us to get back to whom? Our maker. But first of all, I want to ask you, have you always written about devotional religious things?
No, I haven't. I actually started off professionally writing for a publishing company, and I was a writer and editor for a publishing company for many years. And then while I was doing that, I used to take creative writing courses in the Irish Writers' Centre and at UCD and so on. So it was a bit of a journey before I came into the devotional writing. And then I suppose I went back to college in 2010, and I took a master's in journalism. And so I developed my technical writing experience through doing a master's in journalism. But I completed that in 2011, and then in 2012 I got the opportunity to write for the St. Martin magazine. The editor I worked with there was Father Dermot Clifford, and he was extremely helpful. And I found that first one magazine article got accepted, and then another and another and another. So I started to work for the St. Martin magazine, and then Doctrine and Life, and the Sacred Heart Messenger. They were the three main religious magazines I started to write for. And for, I suppose, in about 2014, I started to write for a firm known as CI.net, CatholicIreland.net, and I did write a series of Thoughts for the Day for them for about 6 years. So I did have quite a bit of experience writing devotionals for 6 years. But I would make the point that I have also written for a few other magazines outside that realm as well. I've also written for RTE One's Sunday Miscellany together with... So I'd have a broad experience of writing in addition to writing devotionals and my Catholic writing as well. Yes.
Oh, that is a beautiful understanding. The fact that you did journalism, you actually studied writing. That's what I'm getting from you. You actually studied writing, but you were drawn to this aspect of writing, yeah, which is...
yes, I was, yes. Yeah.
And well, that, obviously, I'm going to ask you an obvious question. Is that to do with your faith? Is there something that was prompting you to say that now I need to do something deeper than magazines?
Yes, it was prompted by my faith, actually. The fact that I could write for a Catholic magazine was important to me and has been an important part of my life. Particularly, you know, that journey would have started, as I said, in 2012, and I have been writing fairly consistently for religious magazines since 2012. And yes, certainly the fact that I'm a practicing Catholic and my faith is important to me, yes, that has been influential in my decision to write for the Catholic religious genre.
Right. Now, one of the things that is written in the little synopsis in the about your book is that you wanted to help people to draw close to God in prayer? Are you a very prayer person yourself? Are you we have to assume you must be extremely prayerful yourself.
Oh yes, prayer is an important part of my life. Yes, yes it is, definitely. You know, I would have a regular prayer routine myself, and you know, it's been important to go to Mass and to pray on a regular basis. Yes, yes, I would do so. Yes.
And because some of the things that you, but you were bringing this in another way, you would from even the two extracts you're going to read one in a few minutes. You were trying to bring God closer to people because you said it's an everyday experience you wanted people to have. God as a parent, God as a shepherd, God as a chef, God as an artist. I mean, I think that's really quite creative to even begin to think of God in those light. I said, apart from someone that's way up there that'll punish you the minute you do something wrong, you wanted to give another aspect. How important was that to find those materials to use so that you could convince people that there's a lot more?
Yes, I see. Yeah, so often people think that, you know, God is sort of someone on high who sort of is there to judge you or is there to watch every mistake. You know, if you're good, you're very, very good. But if you're bad, he's going to punish you for every mistake or whatever it is. Or God is only to be found, say, in a church, for example. But that's not actually that. Certainly for me, that wouldn't actually be true. I mean, sometimes you can experience God very much just maybe through a piece of music or through, as I will discuss later, one of the extracts I was going to read was about Gabriel Szobo. For me, finding God through music and finding God in art has been very important. Obviously, I'm a writer, and you know, to be able to write about God, to be able to write about the faith, is obviously very important to me. Yes, I would say so.
Well, you know, on that note, thank you for explaining that, expanding that answer. Why don't we now look at what was the thought, first of all, because this is a devotional. What's your definition of a devotional?
Sorry, could you repeat that?
Yes, I said, what's your definition of a devotional book?
Oh, I see. Well, a devotional book is a devotion that brings you closer to God, and for me, when I was structuring my devotionals, I chose to select a passage from scripture, to perhaps say a little bit about the passage, to place it in context, then to provide a meditation and a prayer. So the devotional is designed to bring you closer to God and to help you reflect. And indeed, the book is can be used in that kind of way, in the sense that you know, I'm hoping it's an easy read, in the sense that, you know, if you wanted to read the book, say, in one sitting, you could do that. It's 112 pages long, so you could sit down one afternoon and read it in one sitting if you wanted to. Or it's really designed in a way if you wanted to, for example, read a page at a time. You know, you might be sitting at home and or maybe in bed or something, and you just want to read something before you go to bed, so you can read a page a night. Or you could use it as a reflective piece for your prayer time if you so desired.
Right. And that's a really good idea, actually, to have it and just use it as you wish. It's not like you haven't said there are no dates there, are they? January 1, January 2, we don't have that.
No,
it's just
no.
112 pages and different aspects of your own personal encounters, I assume. How important was your creative writing in writing this? Do you get the answer to the question? How important was having this knowledge of writing, the creative side of your writing? Because when we hear now your first extract, it's actually quite easy to follow, yet is very engaging and very searching.
Oh, thank you. Yes, creative writing was actually important. It did help. The fact that you know, that you had had experience of, say, non-fiction writing. I had sort of experience of non-fiction writing and of reporting, but the fact that you had kind of a creative aspect to it as well, where I had written, say, short stories and poems and that kind of thing, that was also helpful. I've never had any short stories or poems actually published professionally, but you know, to have had that experience from a writer's group is certainly very helpful. And thank you for saying that the work was engaging, because that would be what I would hope to achieve.
Right. Well, let's give the taste. Let us have one of your tasters now. One of the extract. Gabriel's Oboe.
Okay, so Gabriel's Oboe. I'm sure your listeners will be familiar with it. It's from the 1986 movie The Mission, and the piece is probably well known to your listeners. So here we go, Gabriel's Oboe. Praise him with fanfare of trumpet, praise him with harp and lyre. Let everything that breathes praise Yahweh. Psalm 150. The music. The oboe is a type of double reed woodwind instrument that is usually made of wood, but it may also be fabricated from synthetic materials such as resin, plastic, or hybrid composites. Gabriel's Oboe is the main theme from the 1986 film The Mission, and was composed by Italian composer Ennio Morricone. The theme features prominently in the film when the protagonist, Jesuit Father Gabriel, walks up to a waterfall and begins to play his oboe with the aim of befriending the Guarani natives with his music and his missionary work in the New World. Meditation. This beautiful work, with its undulating melodic line, brings great peace to my soul. It is something of a church favorite, and I have often played it on the organ at mass, weddings, and funerals, with its warm melodic line where the notes soar and are uplifting. The music is as though it could be played by angels. And although the Gabriel in the title of the piece refers to the film's protagonist, sometimes I think of the angel Gabriel as a potential musician. This is a beautiful work that brings joy to my heart. Reflect on the unexpected ways that music can connect us to God. Often, music acts as God's messenger, visiting us out of the blue, just as Gabriel visited Mary. Can we hear God speaking to us through music? Prayer. Give me joy in my heart, keep me praising. Give me joy in my heart, I pray. Give me joy in my heart, keep me praising. Keep me praising till the end of the day. Traditional hymn, author unknown.
Thank you, Deirdre. That was so... I think the way you performed your extract, really, I hope you're going to have an audio version of it as well, so we could slot it in and hear that beautiful voice of yours. It was very... I find it very, very wonderful, because it's like a couple of things I could do through that extract. I could go and try and find out the film, watch the film, play the music if I hadn't had it before, and also really take time, because, I mean, you took one of the old music hymns that is very, very, very wonderful. Most people would have sang it at one time or another if they've had any Christian upbringing, would have had that, you know, give me joy in my heart, keep me praising. So I will say, if I read that, I thought, my God, you know, there's so much I've learned in just a little piece, and beautifully read. So thank you for that. Now,
thank you.
And no, every month we have a theme. And this month, I want to talk about COVID with you. How was COVID for you?
I suppose when COVID happened first, you know, you heard the announcement on TV and that, you know, it was going to be part of Ireland. And I suppose initially what happened was that COVID was it was something you just saw on TV. But gradually, with the occurrence of the pandemic and so on, you know, it sort of came closer to home. It came into your family circle or into your social circle, and it was sort of something that, you know, it came close to your social circle and so on. So, you know, from being a sort of an abstract experience to being something that affected you in a more personal way, I suppose, yes, there, you know, it was a gradual journey. My own personal COVID journey, and I would be aware that for some of your listeners would either have experienced COVID personally and recovered, or they would have experienced long COVID. Or sadly, I'm sure some of your listeners will have had a family member or maybe a friend who died. So I am aware that people have had different COVID experiences. For me personally, while being aware of that and placing it in context, for me personally, it gave me the time to write, and I was able to write. It gave me the time and opportunity to write my book, God and Every Day, A Whispered Prayer.
So you didn't suffer a writer's block as a result of COVID?
No, I didn't. I suppose writer's block is something that every writer has to deal with from time to time. I mean, for me, I suppose when I was writing my book, I wrote a reflection, or perhaps two reflections every day. And I did that every day for, I don't know, maybe 4 to 6 months. And that was how the book got written. So I didn't really have writer's block. I suppose if I were to give advice to another writer regarding writer's block, what I would say is maybe if you look at maybe the internet or poetry or something for inspiration, that can often be helpful in overcoming writer's block.
Well, congratulations that you're able to write every day for the length of time, hence this book. So obviously we're talking about discipline as well. Did you have a specific time of the day that you had to write? Morning, noon or night? Or you just wrote as it took you and took your pen and your paper or your, you know, your PC and just type away?
Yeah, I mean, generally, when I started initially, what I would do is I would write a reflection in the morning. And that was it. I just wrote one reflection in the morning and maybe typed it up in the afternoon. But as the time went on, I said, you know, you can do more than that. So I would do one reflection in the morning and then one reflection in the afternoon. And yes, I mean, I suppose that's important for every writer to have, as you say, to have discipline. And I found that, I found I could be disciplined. You know, you had your writing routine, and then maybe you'd go out for a walk in the middle of the day and come back and write again in the afternoon, having written in the morning as well. So I found it was good to have a structure to your day. Yes.
Oh, well done. So let's, on that note, I'm glad that COVID is a very positive experience for you, because you were able to bring out a book that could help other people. I think that's really positive that you're able to do something, not just for yourself. We could all enjoy this book now and get closer to our maker. I just want to know whether you could please read for us your second extract.
Oh, yes.
Please.
Yes, the second extract I chose was actually, it's from part two of the book, and it's chapter 8. It's entitled God the Healer, and each chapter is prefaced with an introduction. And so the extract that I've chosen to read to you is the introduction to the chapter entitled God the Healer. God the Healer. This beautiful image of God as healer is prevalent in the New Testament, which attests to the many healing miracles that Jesus performed in his ministry. Jesus was compassionate to those who were in need particularly the sick. He performed many kinds of healing, working with all kinds of people. We can readily imagine God as an everyday healer or doctor, bringing relief to those who need it. We give thanks for our doctors, nurses, healthcare assistants, midwives, physiotherapists, occupational therapists, speech and language therapists, dentists, hygienists, and all other medical professionals without whom life would be very difficult. We are grateful for the skills they bring to our lives and for the way that they heal us and alleviate our ailments. So often, these medical professionals have placed themselves at the front line of danger in order to help those who are in need. When Jesus healed people, he did so in order to demonstrate the love and compassion of God. He helped people physically, but also spiritually, often saying that their sins were forgiven. Jesus showed compassion for those in need, even when tried by adversity. And we ask for the grace to show that same compassion and to trust in the love and mercy of God in times of difficulty.
Oh, wow. Thank you so much. That is so soothing. It's like a balm. You just poured it over us right now. And
thank you.
And I think, you know, these are, so people have 112 pages, I think, of this to read. And where can we get this wonderful book?
It's available in all good bookshops, as the saying goes. And it's also available from, you can go to the Messenger Publications website. The book is published by Messenger Publications, and you can go to their website and order it from there.
And also, have you launched a book, or are you going to launch the book?
I haven't actually launched it yet. I haven't made any immediate plans to do that, so I'm not sure about the launch. I'm not sure as of yet,
but we know that we can get your book. And what about following you? Are there any places where we can get, do you have a blog or something, Facebook, Instagram, that we can maybe connect with you and follow this wonderful, you know, your ideas about God?
Well, thank you, but no, I'm actually not on Facebook or Instagram or Twitter or anything like that. I'm just not on that. But in terms of following me, I mean, certainly by all means, I would be delighted if you supported the book, and you know, I would encourage your listeners and readers to buy the book from local outlets. But in terms of a Facebook page, no, I don't have one.
Well, wonderful. We will get to those places. Reminders of those places again. So this is where we can get the wonderful book written by Deirdre Powell, God in Every Day, A Whispered Prayer. Where can we get them from? Just repeat it for us so that it's sealed in our heart.
It's in all good bookshops, and it's in it's available from Messenger Publications from their website. It can be ordered from their website. There might also be a possibility of getting it on Amazon later in the year, I think maybe towards the end of August.
Right, that's because I think that's where I got it from anyway. That's where I got your extract from. It took me to Amazon.
Yeah.
So anyway, so thank you so much. We've had a great time. Having you read your extract and explain to you what, when people get this book, what would you want? What would be your greatest achievement when they read this book, do you think? As a last point.
I suppose I would like to think that I had brought them closer to God, that I had made somebody's life a little easier for them, and that in the event that somebody feels ill or anxious or isolated, that would bring them comfort, that the book would bring them comfort. I think that would be what I would hope for.
Fantastic. Thank you so much, Deirdre Powell, for coming to this platform, and we wish you the best and success with the book. Thank you.
Thank you very much, Mary. It's been a pleasure to talk to you on this program. Thank you very much. I've really enjoyed it. Thank you.
Hi, and welcome to the events page of International Writers Network. And we're not going to be very long because August is a time when people are on holidays, but some writing groups are still going on. I know the Inkslinger is still going on. They're based in the Irish Writers Centre and they're also still doing some Zoom as well. So why not contact them through the Irish Writers Centre that's based at 19 Parnell Square, Dublin 1. Or you could telephone the Irish Writers Centre at +353 1872 1302, or email them at info@writerscentre.ie. Most groups operating the library will start again in September, but you may want to think about, if there's no writing group in your area, in your library, why don't you look up, why don't you find out how to set one up? I'm sure your local library can help you, or why not contact again the Irish Writers Centre? They'll be happy to help you set up a group for your particular need. And there's so many different types of need. Just get together with groups of people that want to know about writing and they want to write, and you spur each other on to be the best you can. So I want to say this is the events page. Lots of things coming up in September. We have different festivals coming up in September, but August is basically a rest time. And have a good rest till September. Otherwise, check the Irish Writers Centre for workshops and things that are happening during August. Thank you.
Download a podcast and catch up on your listening at near.ie.
Near FM.
Raised on songs and stories.
Hello, Jerry Cooley here, inviting you to join me every Wednesday at 2 o'clock here on Near FM for Raised on Songs and Stories.
It's a good day when you put your feet to the ground, don't mind me telling it to you, even if this is...
So weren't we reared on them?
The Digital Experience. Missed a program or an interview? Catch up now online with the Near FM Digital Experience. We're online 24 hours a day, podcasting every day. Visit nearfm.ie/podcast.
90.3.
This is Near FM.
Hi, and welcome to another edition of International Writers Network. And today we have all the way from Bayside Writers Group, we have a wonderful, amazing writer, Christy Quinn. Krista Green, you're welcome to the platform today.
Thank you.
It's great to have you. And what's so amazing is that you are part of the Bayside Writers Group. How long have you been with them?
Oh, about 20 years, 15 years at least.
That's just amazing. Have you, so 15 years in a writers group, how do you lot keep it up? Well, I hear the listeners saying to themselves, how do they keep it up?
Oh, it's just the social side of it is, appeals to me, you know.
Right.
It's somebody to talk to, as I live alone. So it's quite a pleasant experience to get out and meet people.
And how is that? I know you said there's a social side, which we're going to hear a little bit about in a minute. But how did it help your writing, being part of that particular writers group?
Well, each of the members of the group, when we meet on Wednesday morning at 11 o'clock, just after Mass, we meet in the community centre at Bayside. We had just had the room for an hour and a half till 12:30. So we set the time. We introduce ourselves to one another and pleasantries are passed, and then we decide on what we're going to write on, and each one picks a subject that they wish to write about. And I write essays on almost anything, from colour to flight, speed, temptation, anything. I just write an essay on it, what I think goes, you know?
And how long would that be for?
For 35 minutes. We write for 35 minutes. And at the end of the 35 minutes, we each read out their essay they have written there and then.
So you would then listen to everybody's essay?
Yeah. Well, we have the compare is... we have a compare who comments on the writings. And Paddy is his name. He's an ex-teacher. And he will tell us the good points that we've raised, and perhaps ways that we could have added or phrased differently. And it's nice to have those comments along, you know.
Oh.
So we have all kinds of people that arrive there. We have ex-teachers, ex-civil servants, ex-nurses, married women with children. We have a girl in the class from... She's a German. She lived in Germany she married a German, although she is Irish. She married a German and lived in Germany for a number of years and is a fluent German speaker. And she's a very interesting person and she writes lovely stuff, you know.
So you're just really a bunch of different...
Different people gathered together with interest in writing.
Right. Now, one thing you mentioned that's really, really interesting to me was that you have a compere there who helps you a lot to just... Because he's... I don't want to use the word professional. Because of his background, people don't mind his input into their writing, and yeah, they kind of welcome it. It's not a critique, I think. I think it's more like he's giving you...
Yeah.
...tips and... ideas as to how to improve, and you know.
That's right. Paddy Glavin is our compere, you might say, and he comments on the style of the writing and how good it was or bad or indifferent, and he comments on it to where it could be improved or how it impressed him, certain phrases in it, in the composition. And that's how he just... for a few minutes afterwards, and then we pass to the next writer.
Right.
He writes his turn, and we can all comment on it and as to the nice points that impressed us, you know.
Right. But the compare is the one that will actually say about the actual essay. I'm trying to get the difference.
Yeah, it's a bunch of writings.
Right.
half a dozen writings, six people there, and the six people over 35 minutes each have written an essay, and each one reads it out after the time is up. I'm the timekeeper, and I say, pens down, 35 minutes is up. That's the way it goes. Otherwise, you wouldn't have time to read them back.
Yeah, I think that's wonderful. But normally it'd be 20, 30 minutes people use. But you actually said 35 minutes. Why 35? You're trying to explain that to me earlier.
Well, we used to have it at 30 minutes, but it was a little short, and it was hard to get them to put down the pens when they wanted to write one more sentence, perhaps. We left it at 35.
I think you are very wise. A wise timekeeper, give an extra 5 minutes. Because
yeah.
I've been there where you've done 30 minutes and this, and you still wanted to finish up. That's a really good one. 35 minutes and have a timekeeper and a compare. I'm getting the thing.
All these pieces I have are all 35s.
Well, you know what? Let's start right at the beginning before we talk more. Yeah. Give us your first one, because... listeners, you're going to be fascinated at how wonderful these times are. So, colour, do you want to, which one were you going to?
Colour, yeah.
Colour is a wonderful one to start off with.
All right. This one is called Colour. Colour is a magic thing. It brightens up our lives. It gives us variety to an otherwise drab world and gladdens the heart with its very existence. Take a rainbow, for instance, as it hovers like a gigantic bird across the sky and delights the eye with its splendid array in kaleidoscope of the primary colours of red, orange, green, blue, yellow and indigo. We take colour for granted because of its natural appeal and availability since our childhood. It is only with the gift of sight that the most important of our senses that colour can be appreciated. It cannot be explained in words to one who never could see, as there is not with which to draw a comparison. The chlorophyll in plants and trees gives them a green colour. Pleasant as this may be, they are further enhanced by the rays of the sun, which gives them a warm rustic glow of brown and yellow. It is probably from the sun's heat that the dramatic change in the texture of soil occurs between the tropics. The gold sands of the deserts contrast sharply with that of the northern hemisphere, of rich dark clay which produces the food on whom so many depend, the hard grey permafrost of the tundra differs in every respect from the rich red soil of South Africa, but each in turn has its own aesthetic value, and they give contrast and in colour to their respective parts of the world. Even weather gives us colour. Take the winter with its dark skies and nimbus clouds in abundance, ever ready to unleash torrents of rain. The dark, bad weather gives us the blues. But after winter comes the spring and brighter, sunnier days. The earth responds by shooting forth myriads of plants and flowers, giving colour to the land. Some use colour to give us pleasure of viewing, like the great artists whose skill in the use of colours has left us countless masterpieces to appreciate for the rest of our lives. Chromatics play a vital role in our lives. The colour of your car, the colour television, the colour of skin, eyes, etc. Many US citizens complained of the outrageous amount spent on landing men on the moon, but statistics have shown that a greater amount was spent
by the ladies of the USA in that year, 1969, on makeup to enhance the colour of their skin.
And we ladies have forgiven him because we need to spend money, that amount of money, more than the...
There you go.
Fantastic. Amazing, amazing. Thank you so much for... Thank you for doing that. Thank you for sharing with us. This is 35 minutes and you write those essays in 35 minutes. Now, were you always a writer? Did you always want to write? What were you doing before you got into writing?
Well, I'll tell you a little story. When I was 10 years old in De La Salle School in Navan, where I was born, I was writing an essay in English one day, and the Christian brother, passing along the rows, watching at what we were writing, happened to look at my essay and what I was writing. And he bent down and caught a hold of the page I was writing on, tore it from the copy, rolled it in a ball, and put it in my mouth, and put me standing up on the desk. And I was there for 10 minutes in front of all the class with my essay in my mouth, which he called rubbish. That actually happened to me.
Oh my gosh. So when did you get back to writing then?
That was in 1940. Many years ago. It's 72 years ago, nearly.
And all that time, you just literally stopped writing, I suppose.
Well, he tore the page out of it. That was the end of the essay.
So how did you get back into it? Because you write, we're going to hear another story in a minute.
I was just like a sheep. I couldn't see anything.
Was it?
He was completely dominant over me. He was sadistic in the least. The cruelty he muted out, that's a long story too about.
Yeah.
I'd like to give you another day.
But how did you get back into the writing life?
The writing.
Again?
Well, I was never brilliant at it. I was always about second or third or fourth in my class. I was never bright, but I was in and around there, you know.
Yeah, you were good.
I was just about average, I suppose, you know.
So was it when you got back to the writers' group? Or I'm trying to think of how many years after that did you start to write and to enjoy your writing? Because obviously you enjoy this. We're going to hear another one in a few minutes.
About 70 years after that, I began writing. But there was a lot of things in between. I studied the piano as well. I played trumpet in a brass band, played in orchestras and duets and trios, everything. I played at graveyards, the last post. It's a long story.
So you went on to other things, but the writing was still pulling you. It was still pulling you.
The writing is only the social side of my life.
Right.
I only just go down there for company.
Right. Well, you know what? I think we should have another one of your writing. The poem about...
School pals.
Yeah, I think that was really... That moved me, and I'm sure it's going to move many people.
Okay, here it is. School pals. Long ago when we were young, we went to school together. And hand in hand we walked the road in rain or sunny weather. The days were passed without a care, all joy, no trace of sorrow. No word was heard to pass our lips of what befall tomorrow. The seasons ebbed and years rolled by. We went our separate ways. You wed a farmer. You wed a local farmer lad, tall, strong, with pleasant gaze, while I pursued a college degree that was my parents' choice. You raised your children fine and well,
Your husband helped, I pray thee tell. What brings you here to Harley Street? I am surprised for you to meet. You are not well, and heard for sure that I alone possess the cure to make it right, that again you'd see the little old school by the chestnut tree. Well, now you're better, I'm glad to say, and return to your home so far away. It was fate that brought you for me to see. My skill as a surgeon, you will agree, will enable you now to see much better the road we walked to school together.
Oh, I mean, this is a movie needs to be made of this. We just want to know what happened. The before and the after. And
I'll have to write a sequel to it.
You must write a sequel to it, because we're almost sure a Hollywood movie could be made here. That's the way to tell them.
Absolutely.
You leave us a lot of imagination. So now you're writing, and you've done a whole lot of things in between. And what would you, before we go on to that question I'm going to ask you, this month we're talking about weddings.
Weddings.
Now, yeah, I want you to say that immediately after that. Obviously, the two that loved themselves right at the beginning, they parted in this particular poem that you've just said. And he went one way, she went the other way, but he met her again because she needed a skill. But what do you say about weddings? What does weddings mean? You've got 1 minute, a prompt, to just talk about weddings for us.
Well, let us see. Well, in my opinion, weddings are an essential part of living. Without weddings, we wouldn't have couples to produce children, and if we hadn't children, well, we'd have no future. But weddings nowadays are pumped up to be things of enormous expense. The cost of the wedding itself and the number of guests could run into thousands, perhaps between 2,000 and 5,000 euros for the special day. And then there's the cost of the housing, where to live and how to get the deposit together to purchase the house, and then the enormous mortgage repayments to keep it going. So marriage isn't easy nowadays, and it wasn't easy in times gone by either. For, I won't go into it, but in my own case, I was born in 1930, and when I was 9 years old, the war broke out. And there were many poor people. The war ravaged on, and ration books were issued after the war. It wasn't pleasant. But simple life helped people, enabled them to get married, because things were simpler then. Like, they lived in smaller houses. They hadn't the large outgoings, and they had bigger families. I remember in one house on our street, Academy Street in Navan, there was one house where there was 18 children. The average household would have had 3 or 4, maybe 5. But this woman had 18. And you could say, well, they got married to have children, perhaps. But nowadays, marriage is not for producing children. Most of the births nowadays is delivered by the tummy. I forget what you call it.
Maternity wards?
Pardon?
Maternity wards?
No. The baby, giving birth to the baby, where it's taken from the tummy.
Oh, abortion?
No. No.
Oh, cesarean?
Cesarean.
Oh, right. Sorry, I didn't get you there. Sorry, listeners.
Yeah.
Four out of five births are cesarean nowadays. They don't go through the normal channels at all. Most of them are through the stomach. You'd hardly credit that, but it's true.
A lot of complications.
I think it's 3 out of 5, maybe 4. But it's at least 3 out of 5 births in Ireland are
Cesarean.
Cesarean.
Well, I never thought about it like that. This got wedding to cesarean. Thank you very much. Thank you very, very much. Listen, we're coming closer towards the end of the programme now. Now, you've told us about how you got into writing, what happened before you got into writing, and the wonderful other things you do. I think I'm going to say, before you give us a song, because you do have a melodious voice, could you give us another, just really quickly, another story? Because I think we'll enjoy your stories.
Okay, Dom. This one is called I Broke It Off. EYE, Broke It Off. The weather that was pleasant and Mary exuberant as usual was in the process of applying nail varnish to her delicate fingernails. She was young, 22, pretty as a picture, and with a figure to match, could be classified as attractive. Her personality was smooth and friendly, lively and vivacious, and consequently she had many friends. She lived alone with her aged mother, who thought it amusing to see Mary going to so much trouble, blowing on her nails and shaking her hands so as to dry the varnish that much quicker. She was expecting John, to whom she was recently engaged, to call for her that in his car at 7:30 that evening, and it was now 17:15, and she was still had her hair to do. Would she be ready in time? She anxiously thought. So engrossed in her preparations was Mary that she did not notice that one of the small gas rings was alight next to her, and she inadvertently placed the bottle of varnish close to the tiny flame while she gyrated her fingernails. In the blink of an eye, there was an explosion and a burst of flame directed straight at Mary's face. She felt a sharp, stinging sensation in her right eye, followed by dreadful pain and general scorching of her forehead and hair. John arrived almost immediately after and witnessed the trauma of the situation. He took her to hospital, where she underwent an emergency operation to save the sight of her eye. But alas, it was not to be, and she had to accept the catastrophe. She would be blind in her right eye for life. For a while, John continued to see her, and those who knew them thought that they would marry as they had planned the following August. This was not to be, however, and as August drew near, John's love for Mary waned more and more day by day. In July, his mind being in a quandary, he told her he could not go through with the wedding and wished to break off the engagement. She reluctantly agreed, being of the mind that if he could not tolerate her, that if he could not tolerate how she then looked, there was no hope of a future happy married life together with him.
Oh my word, you know how to break. That's a heartbreaking one. But the eye
broke it off.
That was thank you. You are absolutely super brilliant, and we have come to the end. Thank you so much. But you know, because you have such a melodious voice. You have a song for us. So I'm going to say, if you could just sing that song.
Okay.
For
it's
us.
Short and sweet, like an ass scallop. Okay. Here goes. It's called Annie's Song. You fill up my senses like a night in the forest, like the mountains in springtime, like a walk in the rain, like a storm in the desert, like a sleepy blue ocean. You fill up my senses, come fill me again. Come let me love you, let me give my life to you. Let me drown in your laughter, let me die in your arms. Let me lay down beside you, let me always be with you. Come let me love you, come love me again. You fill up my senses like a night in a forest, like the mountains in springtime, like a walk in the rain, like a storm in the desert, like a sleepy blue ocean. You fill up my senses, come fill me again.
Oh. Encore, that was beautiful. Thank you so much.
Such a popular. You're more than welcome.
Thank you so much. Thank you for coming. And we really appreciate you for the time you've taken. And now, you're one of the celebrants of International Writers Network. You have graces with your occasion, with your wonderful work. How could we see more of your work?
It's amateurish. I don't think it's great at all. It's amateurish, you know. It's simple.
I think that's where we need to start. Simple.
Simple.
And make the point.
Simple. Touches the heart, you know. Everyday stories, you know. There are many stories out there that can be told, but we don't stop and stare. We haven't time, as John Donne said. We haven't time to stop and stare.
Which is what we need to do.
Yeah.
Thank you so much.
You're more than welcome.
Thank you. Appreciate you. Thank you.